Hey there, everybody. I'm Jane.
I'm Olivia.
And welcome to the podcast all about your favorite comedy crime show, Psych. I'm very excited. Today we are doing episode 2, season 3. It's my favorite episode to date. I love this episode. Olivia?
Yes.
Is it your favorite episode?
Thus
far? I mean, there's a lot to choose from. You got American Duos.
Yeah. I'd say it's probably like my number 2.
Number 2. Interesting. Interesting. Well, it is called Murder. Anyone? Anyone? Bueller?
If that doesn't give you a hint.
So here's why I love this episode. It's set in 2008.
Yeah.
They're at their 13th year high school reunion because weird why number. Not? And so that means that they graduated in 1995. But yet this episode is all about the 80s. And I don't know why, and I don't care.
Well, it makes sense.
No.
It does to me.
Why does it make sense?
Because I'll think about it for me.
Okay.
So I'm about to be graduating. A lot of the media that I consume when I was younger is about 10 years older.
Old, okay.
Yeah. So in my head, it makes sense that Sean enjoys all of this stuff from the 80s because he grew up watching it.
Right. So Sean does, but even at the dance, they were playing songs from the 80s.
Well, yeah.
But they should have been playing songs from the year they graduated. So I hated high school.
Well,
I hated high school. But I did go to one of my reunions. I don't remember if it was 5 year or 10 year. They played music
from that year?
From the year that I graduated. But throughout this episode, they were playing Love is a Battlefield by Pat Benatar, which came out in the 80s. They played Thompson Twins' song that was in 16 Candles, came out in 82 or 83. They played at least one song from Breakfast Club, came out in the 80s. And so, you know, they had all these musical references during the episode, not just Sean saying them, but you could hear the songs.
But want to know else? Well, something else? Gus is the one in charge. He's the planning committee.
That's true.
He was not the DJ, but he can tell DJ, hey, yo, play this kind of stuff.
Very true. He was responsible for telling the DJ what to play.
Probably. We don't know this.
You can pretty much guarantee, because he did the whole thing by himself. But that does not distract from the fact that I...
Well, now you're nitpicking your favorite episode.
I'm not nitpicking, no, because that was my favorite thing about the episode.
Was the fact that it is not...
Because everything about it spoke to me, who was in high school in the 80s. I graduated in 87. And so all of the pop culture references, they were...
All for it?
They were, yeah, I was here for it. I could have used more, frankly. So this is the one episode that does not open with a flashback. It opens right at the beginning of the reunion. Again, the episode came out in 2008, so modern day. And what's playing? Don't You Forget About Me from Breakfast Club. We almost immediately see the pineapple sitting on the check-in table. And then as Gus and Sean are moving around the room, Sean immediately starts in on his 80s references.
Yeah.
A couple walks in and he says, oh, look, it's Andrew McCarthy and Molly Ringwald. And then he notices the guy is wearing cowboy boots and he goes, from Fresh Horses, which is not a good movie.
Yeah. And so instead of having name tags, they have their yearbook photos.
Right.
And Sean didn't like that. So he has a photo of...
I'm waiting to see if you remember his name. Miss Know-It-All.
I'm trying to remember. I'll from Breakfast you. Club. Jeff? No, just... I'm trying to get...
You're not going to.
No.
Judd Nelson, who played John Bender in Breakfast Club. But that, it was like a close-up of his face.
It's very close-up.
Yes. So Gus is in charge of the reunion and he wants everything to go perfectly. He tells Sean, don't mess anything up. Just go get me some folding chairs. And while Sean is heading to go, well, actually, and who walks in But Abigail, played by Rachel Lee Cook, who was in her own, I think, 90s teenage rom-com. She's all that.
Just waiting to hear Hallmark. I was going to be so angry.
She's been in Hallmark.
Oh, great.
But she's most known for She's All That, which, like I said, I think that was in the 90s, because that's like the Freddie Prinze, Paul Walker genre time frame, which is more 90s. But anyway, he sees her and is totally flummoxed by seeing Abigail. But he says, hey, let's go get the chairs together. And so while they're heading to the cafeteria to get the chairs, he sees kind of out the window behind her someone fall to their death from the roof.
Before that, while they're just sort of walking, it's very clear that they had some sort of type of...
like a history.
Yeah, like a history. But they're both flirting back and forth, and but they're also still like getting to know each other again, sort of. Because
they hadn't seen each other in 13 years.
And Sean brings up that he's a psychic detective to her.
Right.
And she jokes, oh, somebody going to steal my lunch money?
Right.
That's when he sees somebody fall. He sees
the body, right. So they go running to get Gus and go outside. But by the time they get there, there's no body. And Gus is frustrated. And Abigail doesn't believe it either. And Gus says, I sent you to get chairs. And Sean says, no, there really was. He was wearing one of those Letterman jackets, like the guy that I saw walk in that looked like Andrew McCarthy. By the way, played by Ben Ayers, also a Hallmark actor.
Why, psych? What? You know what? No, it's not psych's fault. Why, Hallmark? Why?
So Sean says, no, the guy was wearing a Letterman's jacket. Yeah, I saw him fall off the roof. And they're kind of arguing over it. And Gus accuses Sean of trying to ruin the reunion, which I wouldn't put it past Sean if it was a normal night. And as they're walking away, though, Sean sees in the dirt part of one of the lapel pins that like on the Letterman jacket.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Gus is walking away saying, nobody, no crime. And you laugh because you realize they say this line in the episode a lot.
Yeah, so never said before, not once, not in any episode prior to this, but everyone, and I mean everyone, says it, nobody, no crime.
Nobody, no crime.
And it basically becomes like a running joke through the episode because Sean keeps trying to get people to be like, no, I saw this dead body, like
it, right.
Like there was a crime here, but because nobody believes him, they keep saying no body, no crime.
Well, I thought it was funny that you were frustrated with how many times they said it. You know, like that's not a thing. And I said, well, actually, just last night I watched an episode of Dateline, and in that episode, it was about a woman who had gone missing for 30 years, and the detectives, they couldn't do anything because they had no body, so they couldn't prove there was a crime. So I thought it was hilarious that the episode says nobody, no crime. And even on Dateline, they say nobody, no crime. Yeah. So meanwhile, Henry is at home by himself, a man with two steaks ready to be put on the barbecue.
I'll be honest about the scene real quick.
Uh-huh.
Every time that I've watched it, I always only see one of the steaks. I've never seen two.
I think because he already took one out and prepared it and had the other one left. I could swear when the scene started, there were two steaks in there.
I've only seen one.
So what do you think? He was going to ask Madeline to come over for dinner and then rush out and buy another steak?
Yeah. I think Henry was willing to. If not, I think he's going to cut it in half.
No, you can't cut a steak in half. Your data does it for us, yes, because he buys ginormous steaks. But Henry is not going to invite his ex-wife, who he's trying to impress, to come over for dinner and then cut a gorgeous steak in half.
If not, he's going to give her that steak and he'll make something else. Yeah, he'll make something else.
Yeah. Well, that's the scene, basically, is that he's got either one steak, two steaks, who knows. And he calls
Maddie. Some number of steaks.
Yes, he calls Maddie at the hotel and says, hey, I've got food here. Do you want to come over? And she says, no, actually, I just had a salad from room service. And he was so nervous and cute. And then as he was hanging up, he's like, ba ba boop. And then even after he hung up the phone, he's like, ba ba boop. Like, what is that?
So
poor Henry.
for that line specifically in my head, just because of like who I watch on the internet, there's one person that I watch that actually says a line very similar.
Is it Baba Booey?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's from Howard Stern.
Well, how am I supposed to know? The internet.
Yeah, no, Baba Booey has been around for forever, and it's the nickname for Gary, who was Howard Stern's producer for many, many years, and eventually he got the nickname Baba Booey, and then people would prank call, like people on the news,
yeah,
who were taking calls, and they would act like they're a legitimate caller, mm-hmm. and then at the end they'd finish with Baba Booey and then hang up.
Yeah, why?
As a gag.
I mean, it's a weird line anyways, but...
Yeah, it's just a thing that's been around forever.
Hmm. Yeah. Be honest, didn't know the origin.
Do you even know who Howard Stern is?
Heard the name, no clue what he looks like.
Oh my goodness, I used to listen to Howard Stern all the time. All right, so anyway, so moving on. So Sean goes back inside after the whole thing out in the field where there was no body. And he calls Lassiter, because he knows Lassiter will be on the case. But you know what? Lassiter is already at the reunion because he's on a date.
Yes.
To which Gus says, with a human?
Well, also, at their reunion, they both bring up, why are you here for a date? Like, yeah. Couldn't go somewhere else?
Well, it turns out he had gone to a Ravi Shankar concert the prior week.
No clue who that is either.
He's like, I will cut in some of his music underneath this podcast right now. But he plays a sitar. It's very Indian, Eastern influenced music. And not something that Lassiter would go to. But he met a woman named Mindy while he was at that concert. And she asked him to go on a date with him. And the date ended up being the reunion.
Yes.
Very unorthodox.
I will say, Lassiter didn't know that it was going to be for a school reunion.
Right.
So I'll give him a... little billy way.
A little pass.
Yeah.
Well, he ends up agreeing with Gus, and he says, if there's no body, I can't investigate a crime. And so Sean starts to describe, like, the pin that he found and asks, what does the pin mean? And Gus says, well, we were state champs. The football team was state champs.
Well, no.
And they all got pinned.
Sean asked if the football team was good.
Well, I wasn't going to go into the whole detail of the conversation. But the football team were state champs. And so that's when he realized, as he looked at all the football players in the room, the only one he remembered having the pin was the captain of the football team that walked in, Howie, at the beginning. He says, I know who the victim is. It is Howie Tolkien. And Gus says, that's impossible, because there he is right over there. So cut to, you see him walking in alive and well with his wife, and they're kind of adjusting their clothes, and to me that implied that they just hooked up in some random hallway in the school.
Yeah. When it showed them, I was like, that's very suspicious.
I didn't think it was suspicious. I thought they hooked up.
No. Not as much the girl, but Howie. I was like, what are you doing, man?
Yeah, he was adjusting his clothes because he just hooked up in the hallway.
And that looks suspicious.
It looks suspicious that they hooked up somewhere else in the school. The funny thing about that scene, though, is that Gus is like, did you ever go to a football game? Do you know nothing about our school? Did you even go to our school? And Sean says, of course I didn't go to the football games.
If I'd gone
to the football games on Fridays, I would have missed Step by Step.
What is that?
Step by Step was a very popular TV show. And it starred Patrick Duffy and Suzanne Summers. And I think that they were like, I didn't watch the show, but I think they were like a blended family and they had teenagers. Uh-huh. And it was a comedy, a typical TGIF kind of comedy back in the day.
You've given me
more than you needed.
Yeah, no, I don't know who any of that is.
You don't know who Patrick Duffy or Suzanne Summers is? I'm not surprised because they're both really from the 80s and mm-hmm. 70s. But anyway, that cracked me up. Again, I told you this episode speaks to me because it's all about stuff that...
Where it does not speak to me. I've seen some of the John Hughes movies, but...
Right.
Not enough that I'm like, oh, yes, I know what this is from. Well, some stuff, yes, but...
So at this point, Sean is just frustrated because Gus doesn't believe him. Lassie doesn't believe him. Abigail doesn't believe him. So he calls Juliet And he says, Juliet, you need to get down here and help me. Nobody believes me. But what was funny about that later is that then at some point you see a lineup of nerds against the lockers.
And Sean.
And Sean. And it's basically a recreation of the scene in 16 Candles where the nerds are all lined up against the wall doing their nerd thing.
Mm-hmm. Talking about girls.
Talking about girls and how their day will come. Well, Sean notices that the football trophy case had been kind of broken into and that a lot of Howie's football stuff was messed up. And then Juliet walks in and the nerds are all horrified. They're like, you lied to us. You told us you were a loser like us and you've got a girl and she's hot. That made me laugh. So Sean says, you need to come in and you need to start interviewing people at this reunion so that we can figure out who the murderers are and who got murdered. And so she agrees to go in and they end up going up to Howie. And what was his wife's name? Eileen?
Yes.
They go up to Howie and Eileen and fake like they all know each other. And I laughed because Sean introduced himself as Abe Froman, Sausage King of Chicago. And that's a riff from Ferris Bueller because Ferris Bueller introduces himself as Abe Froman, Sausage King of Chicago.
Yeah.
To get into the restaurant. Well, they talk to them about the vandalism and Howie says he's not worried about it. He says it's all ancient history and he's moving on because now he's running for state assembly. And Sean and Juliet, they think he's acting kind of
weird,
but they got to let him walk away. But Juliet says that, you know, nobody lets go of their past completely. Certainly not the captain of the football team who's wearing the jacket at the reunion. There's no way he's going to be okay with his trophy case being messed up. But Sean is still not able to prove that anything is happening and he's getting frustrated. So he needs to go onto the roof where he thinks whoever died fell from. And Gus says, there's no way. The school is on lockdown. The only part we can access is this part right here. And so Sean calls Henry at home and says, hey, I need you to find the box of all my high school mementos that's in the attic.
Mm-hmm.
And Henry doesn't know what that box is. He ends up having Madeline come over to help him find it. And while they're up there, they're kind of reminiscing a little bit. And Madeline finds the box. And rather than call Sean and tell him, hey, we've got it, come get it.
They both go down there.
They both go to the school and show up at the reunion. Well, meanwhile, while they're doing that, Gus is striking out. He's trying to talk to some ladies there.
Mm-hmm.
No one cares about his pharmaceutical sales.
Because it's boring.
It is boring, but you make good money in pharmaceutical sales. So even though he wasn't treated like he was successful, he is successful.
I don't want to hear about mucus reducers.
No, it's not a glamorous job. That is for sure.
What he needed to do was talk
bank.
Pharmaceuticals, great. He needs to talk less about what he's, you know, selling his products. He needed to talk more about, like, the business side and that kind of stuff. Because I feel like more people think of, like, I guess, rich with people who do business, not pharmaceuticals. At least in my mind.
Right. Well, like I said, I know a couple pharmaceutical sales people, and they do really well.
Yeah.
They do really well for themselves. Well, he sees that it's not going well, and so he pivots and says, well, you know, I also have a side gig where I work with a psychic detective agency. And this one lady's like, oh, really? Tell me more about that. And so he mentions a lot of the crimes that he solved. So he mentions how he saved American Duos.
Yeah. Which is the singing competition. That's what got the girl to...
Yeah, she's like, I remember that. That was you? And then he talks about how he caught a counterfeiter. And that's from the dual psychic episode where the female psychic was actually in cahoots with the counterfeiter who was making all the money.
And then a nanny ring.
The nanny ring, which is the nanny cameras that were spying on people and breaking in when they weren't around.
And I think that's it.
Yeah, I think, those might have been the only three. But she's totally in now at that point and paying more attention to him. And in another part of the room, Lassie striking out because Lassie figures out that Mindy only brought him to make her high school boyfriend jealous. The boyfriend is now married.
Yes.
And Mindy is not happy about it. And so she is trying to make the boyfriend jealous by talking about Lassiter's a cop and he's killed people and he's really important. And Lassie's just frustrated because he's clearly...
Just being used,
and he knows it now. Yeah. Sean's parents show up, and they have the box. Sean is horrified. He's like, nobody else's parents are here.
Well, he's more like, I told you, hey, I was going to come get it. Why are you here?
I know, but the way he was acting was like a high schooler who's embarrassed that his parents have showed up at the school dance.
I know, but it...
It was funny. Stop it. It was funny. He takes the box, he opens it up, and he pulls out a set of keys, and it turns out that it's every key to the school. Now, I have a nitpick.
Okay.
There's no way all of those keys are still active and working. They had to have changed some of those locks in the 13 years since he graduated.
You don't know that.
I'd be very surprised if all the locks were the exact same.
How often?
We live in a house. That's a school with many, many doors.
Yeah, but, I mean, if people aren't constantly being, like, important people aren't constantly being changed out, like, people that...
I would think a custodian team probably has high turnover, and you're going to want to swap out those keys every time you lose, because who knows what key they're taking with them. So, you know?
I would assume they'd be very diligent on getting keys back.
That's still a nitpick for me. So he has the keys. He and Abigail go up to the roof. And it was hilarious because this scene not only had him doing the dance from Breakfast Club in full, but it also had the closing song from 16 Candles by Thompson Twins. It's one of my all-time favorite songs. And he basically, as he's about to kiss Abigail in the moment, he sees out of the corner of his eye a footprint that matches the cowboy boots that Howie had been wearing, and he realizes he knows who the killers are. He may not have a body, but he knows who the killers are. So he leaves Abigail. Well, they leave, and he tells Gus what he discovered, and he wonders why they would kill someone. Why, if they killed somebody, why would they still be there at the reunion dancing?
Yeah.
That there's something going on because if they had killed somebody, they would leave the scene of the crime.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be a reason. And so Sean and Gus, they go to the library to start investigating. And they're looking in the yearbooks, trying to figure out what connection Howie and Eileen had during the high school years. And that's when Sean posits that in every John Hughes romance movie,
mm-hmm.
There's a ducky. There's a third wheel. And so he's convinced that Howie and Eileen have their own ducky. And he just needs to figure out who it is. And so as they're looking in the yearbooks, they realize that there was a kid who was in auto shop who is always kind of in the background of the photos of Howie and Eileen. And he's like, that's our guy.
And he also has something to do with the football team. Doesn't he?
Yeah, wasn't he like a trainer or equipment
water
guy?
Boy.
Water boy, yeah. So meanwhile, while they're doing all the searching, Gus is lamenting that he's not successful. And, you know, all these other people are really, they stand out and they're great. And he's, you know, just Gus selling pharmaceuticals. And Sean says, you are amazing. And there's no reason for you to compare yourself because you're doing great. And then he says, come on, we need to be Milo and Otis. Did you know that reference?
No.
Do you watch any movies? You do watch movies. You don't know The Adventures of Milo and Otis?
No.
All right. Well, that movie was a movie about a dog and a cat. Came out in the 80s. First as a Japanese film. Then it came out like 2 or 3 years later as an American film. Dudley Moore was the narrator. I have a Milo and Otis story. So, by 1989, I was in college and I was interning during the summer for a government agency. My boss, his daughter also worked for the same agency. She was older than me. She had a kid who was like 3 or 4 years old. So she needed some babysitting. And so I told her, hey, I'll babysit for you. She's like, that'd be great. I just need 3 or 4 hours to go do what I need to do. So I volunteered to take her kid to go see The Adventures of Milo and Otis. So we're sitting there watching this movie, and I'm so proud of him because he's not asking to get up. He's not talking. He's behaving perfectly. And with 5 minutes left in the movie, he turns to me and says, I gotta go to the bathroom. And because he was only 3 or 4, I had to take him, which meant we missed the end of the movie. So I have no idea how it ends to this day.
So you're gonna complain at me for having not seen it when you don't even know how it ends?
Yep.
Okay, you don't get to do that.
Well, that's my memory of Milo and Otis. You know, the other tidbit about that movie is that there were claims of animal cruelty on the set because it was not animated. It was real cats and dogs and everything in the movie.
Yeah, I assumed as much.
And there were claims that they harmed a lot of cats and killed a lot of cats as a result of making this. I know, it's bad. Bad, bad, bad. But it's still a super cute movie.
But I don't want to see it now.
But I think that's when Humane Society stepped up their game as far as really having people on set to monitor what people were doing with animals. I think it was as a result of Milo and Otis. Sean heads over to the shop class because one of the pictures that they saw in the yearbook was of the kid working on a car in an auto shop. And who should be in the car but Henry?
Dun, dun, dun.
In a callback to 16 Candles, the scene where Molly Ringwald and Anthony Michael Hall, I was going to say Scott, I'm like, that's wrong. Anthony Michael Hall sit in the car when she runs away from the Jake at the dance, and it's a whole thing. I love 16 Candles.
Haven't seen it.
It's a problematic movie now, but back then, oh my gosh, it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen. But anyway, so Henry's in the car alone, and he's kind of reliving his high school days, and he says that the reason why he's in there is because the door was already unlocked. And Sean looks, and he sees that there's a beer can in the back of the car, and over on the wall is a picture of the kid with his name on it. His name was Peter Coulter. And while Henry is wallowing in his sadness, Sean says, oh, you know what? I need to go back and work on this case that I'm working on. And by the way, do you think I can have your underpants?
I'm assuming a callback.
From 16 Candles.
See, this is funny for somebody who's seen it, but
We will put it on the list. I could swear that I've shown you 16 Candles. I could swear.
We started it and I got bored.
Oh my goodness, how could you possibly get bored with that movie?
Because it's boring.
It is.
It was a boring movie.
Dare you?
I didn't like Breakfast Club either.
Totally different movie. Breakfast Club, I don't feel was a comedy. It was a melodrama. 16 Candles from beginning to end. Super, super funny, although very problematic by today's standards. Still funny movie. I love 16 Candles. All right. So anyway, so do you think I can have your underpants? Which I died. I cackled at that line. It was a true cackle. So Sean and Gus leave the reunion and they actually go with Juliet to the police station so that they can do a background check on Peter and find out what's going on with Peter because Peter's not at the reunion. And that's where they discovered that he was actually in a car accident during high school years that involved alcohol. And he ended up hitting a guy on the street, a pedestrian. That pedestrian ended up in a coma and then later died a few months later. And so it turns out in the investigation, they realized that Howie and Eileen were actually in the car with him during this accident. And as they're looking at the pictures of the crime, Sean sees or Gus sees a bruise on Howie's forehead.
Sean.
Was it Sean? Sean sees a bruise on Howie's forehead that was clearly from the steering wheel and that the driver's seat was really far back as though somebody really tall were driving. Well, Howie, as we know from the reunion, is really tall. So Sean realizes that it was Howie who was actually driving the car, but Peter covered for him not realizing that the guy would eventually die.
Yeah.
Like, clearly he did not do it knowing that somebody was going to die. He did it as a favor for who he thought was his best friend.
Yeah.
So then Juliet announces that Howie and Eileen had a restraining order out against Peter. And as they're discussing that, Chief Vic shows up and says,
what you doing?
You shouldn't be here right now. And she says, especially you and Sean, Gus and Sean, because you haven't even been assigned a case. And Sweet Lassiter covers for them because it turns out that he busted Mindy when she was messing with him at the dance. He accidentally dumped her bag out and found that she had been filling prescriptions under a fake name.
For many years.
And it was the worst date of his life. He was thrilled to book her.
Well, no, he said it was the best date.
Well, it became the best date because he was able to arrest her and book her on the prescription drug charge. But he covers for Sean and Gus and Juliet for being there. Which was awesome for him to do. Gus has to get back because, as you know, he's the host of the reunion.
Yes.
And so they go back and Sean goes to where he believes the body fell and realizes that what probably happened is that Howie and Eileen shoved the body down through the window into the girls' locker room because that's the only place it could have been disposed of.
Yeah.
And so as they're going into, Gus and Sean sneak their way into the girls' locker room. And as they're running around in there, Howie and Eileen show up. And they're obviously there to get the body. Sean and Gus go and hide in like a storage room area.
Well, originally, didn't they hide in a bathroom stall?
Yeah. And then as they were moving to a different location, one of the doors made noise and Howie and Eileen heard them. And so they hid in a storage room, and that's when they looked at the mascot costume and realized, oh, there's something in there. It must be Peter. So as they're being chased by Howie and Eileen, they manage to get out, and they realize the only way they can get... Oh, they wanted to call Lassie, and Sean says, no, we can't get Lassie because by the time we go get Lassie and come back, they'll have moved the body again. We got to do something now with the body.
Yeah.
So they pick up the body in the costume and start running around. And this was another Ferris Bueller callback. So they walk down the hall and they pass these two girls. And they leave the shot. And then they come back into the shot. And Sean introduces himself to the girls. You know, like, hey, my name is Sean. Sean Spencer. Which is something that Ferris did in Ferris Bueller. I'm telling you, this movie is all... or this episode is all callbacks to some of my favorite movies from my teenage years. So they go back in to the main area where the reunion is because Gus has to announce who the king and queen of the reunion are. They call Howie and Eileen up to the stage to accept their crowns. And it's at that point that Sean says, They're crowns of lies.
It's time. Basically, he just reveals that.
And he talks about the whole thing about how they covered up the truth about the accident and that Peter was frustrated that he took the blame for that guy's death and that he did it all to protect Howie, who then did nothing for him.
Yeah.
After the fact. And that if anything, Howie, when he decided to run for state assembly, that's when he took out the protective order. In to keep Peter from coming doing near anything. Them and doing anything. But Peter couldn't keep quiet. He kept trying to contact them and then finally came to the reunion drunk. They got in a fight on the roof. And as they're having the altercation, Howie and Eileen push him off the roof, silencing him forever. And it's at that point that Lassie and Juliet bring some cops up onto the stage, handcuff the king and queen, and walk them off the stage.
Yeah. Very interesting reunion, to say the least.
If my reunion had been like that, I would have gone to all my subsequent reunions.
13th, though.
That's fine. My fifth was garbage. But I think the reason why my fifth reunion was garbage was because it was still fresh.
Yeah.
I was only 5 years out of high school, so I still hated all those people.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So, and none of them had had time to change. Mm-hmm. So.
But didn't you say that you also went to your 10th?
Well, I think I only went to my 5th. I think my friend KJ wanted me to go to the 10th, and I said absolutely not. And then last year or 2 years ago, no, 4 years ago, I'm trying to think of when I graduated. 4 years ago was our 30th. Mm-hmm. And one of the girls messaged me and said, you really need to come. And I said, I really don't.
Yeah.
Need to be dragged into that. I may go ahead and go to the 40th.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see people. Because at the 30th, my favorite teacher showed up. And I would have loved to have seen him.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's going to end up at my 40th, I'll go to my 40th, if only to see that teacher. Because I loved him. He's my government teacher my senior year. And I loved him to death.
Anyways, to the episode.
Back to the episode. So the case is over. And Sean was very sweet because he then gives a little speech all about Gus and how awesome he is and how they've been best friends since they were 5. And if you have a friend who's half as good as my friend, then you're pretty lucky because Gus is amazing. He not only organized this whole thing, but he helped solve the crime. And, you know, basically he deserves your respect. It was very, very sweet. And Henry turns to Madeline and, you know, they turn to each other and she's like, you know,
we raised a pretty good kid.
And Henry says, no, that was all you. You did that. And she's like, I'm not so sure. I think it's, you know, a little bit you too.
Mm-hmm.
It was very sweet. Sean finds Abigail. Taps her on the shoulder and he says, look, you know, it's been 13 years and I got to admit to you that date we were supposed to have at the end of our senior year that you think I didn't show up for, I did show up. I was nervous as all get out. You were on the pier wearing this dress, these shoes, this jewelry. You waited,
basically explaining every little detail.
Proving that he was there. You waited an hour and then you left and I've regretted it ever since. And she grabs him and kisses him and it's very cute. But Sean, after that kiss, realizes, you know what? I think this is closure because over Abigail's shoulder, he sees Juliet. And he realizes that it's Juliet that he actually has feelings for.
Yeah.
My little heart went pitter-patter. I thought that was very sweet.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing.
It's been foreshadowing since episode, like, one. No, two. Two is when Juliet started.
Was it two?
Yeah, because they had the other girl who was Lassiter's girlfriend in number one, who then left.
Right. Yeah.
I'm glad I still remember.
All right, so let's see. So that's the end of the episode.
Woo!
And it was a great episode. So we did a lot of the trivia throughout just because you couldn't help but do all the trivia throughout.
Yeah.
But there is a little bit more. I don't know if you knew, but Dulé Hill, who plays Gus, was also in She's All That with Rachel Lee Cook. So that was a cute little reunion that took place. The movie actually ends with a voiceover and it's an homage to Breakfast Club because the homework assignment in Breakfast Club is they have to write a letter. Like, mm-hmm. to describe who they are.
I was confused because you said the movie ended. I'm like, what?
Episode ended. Yeah. Well, no, Breakfast Club movie ended.
Yeah, I know.
But this episode also ended with Gus doing a voiceover.
Yes.
About who they are. And, oh, by the way, you owe us $3,000 for solving the crime.
Well, no. He said they were for damages to the school.
Yes, but the damages were they wrote off. They still owe $3,000. So the total
Explain to me, money, please.
The total bill was $4,500.
Got it.
$1,500 of it went to damages to the school.
Got it.
The school still owed them $3,000 for solving the crime.
Awesome.
But I don't see how that's possible because the school did not hire them to solve a crime.
That is also true.
Yeah. So I'm like, I don't know why you're doing this letter. No one's going to pay you that money because no one hired you to solve the crime.
Yeah.
So maybe the police department will give them a kickback for a reward of some kind.
Chief Vic already said they're not getting paid.
That's true. All right, so let's see. We talked about the pineapple.
Yes, we did.
We talked about this episode didn't have a flashback.
Yes, we did. Well, other than, you know, the whole 80s stuff.
Right.
Why is it your favorite?
That's why.
That's it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, while you were going through it, I realized I don't really like the pacing of it.
Really?
Yeah. Weird pacing.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Well, maybe I just had my rose-colored glasses on from all 80s. Of the 80s references that I was willing to overlook.
I mean, and it also might be because of that that you like it so much. It definitely feels not like dated, but if you don't know the references, it's not, you're not going to connect with it as much.
I could see that. I thought you would connect with it because I thought you had seen more of those movies than not, but apparently you've only seen a few of them.
Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink, Ferris Bueller. That's it.
Okay, so you did get a couple of them.
But not many.
But not many. Well, that's probably why.
So I know the movie Flubber that he also mentioned.
That's right.
Never seen it. I've heard of it, though.
Yeah, because Sean makes a reference to John Hughes movies and says, this is not...
This.
Yeah.
Definitely not Flubber.
Definitely not Flubber. Going back to the discussion of the music, that they kept playing 80s music.
Yes.
If they had played music from 1995, I've pulled up a list of the most popular songs from 1995.
Let's see if I know any of them.
They should have been playing songs like Gangsta's Paradise.
I know it.
By Coolio. Waterfalls by TLC.
I know it.
Kiss from a Rose by Seal.
No clue.
On Bended Knee by Boyz II Men.
No clue.
Take a Bow by Madonna.
Got nothing.
Run Around by Blues Traveler.
Never heard of them.
Always by Bon Jovi.
Nope.
Boombastic by Shaggy.
Nope.
You Gotta Be by Desiree. I loved her album.
That also don't know.
I love Desiree. You Are Not Alone by Michael Jackson. You don't remember that song?
I do, but it's not very good.
Hold My Hand by Hootie and the Blowfish.
Nope. I've heard of them. No clue that song. We got anything else?
Well, of course, Only Want to Be With You, also by Hootie and the Blowfish. Let's see. I'm the Only One by Melissa Etheridge.
Nope.
Big Papa, Notorious B.I.G.
Heard it. I've never actually heard the song. I know it.
But you know of it?
Yeah.
I'll Make Love to You, Boyz II Men. Dear Mama by Tupac.
Okay. Now it's getting sad.
Roll to Me by Delamitri. Ooh, Scream by Michael Jackson and Janet Jackson. And it was in that music video, it's a great music video, that I realized Janet is the better dancer. Everybody thought Michael Jackson was such a great dancer. But of course, once Janet put out Control in the 80s, mm-hmm. everybody realized, okay, she can really dance. But it was the Scream video where they were both dancing together in the video that I realized, holy cannoli, Janet dances.
Yeah.
She's an amazing dancer. I'll show you that video. It's a great video. But those are the songs that would have been playing at their reunion. Not Thompson Twins. Not Simple Minds. Olivia's giving me a look like, just be quiet, Mom.
I will also say I was thinking of what songs would be played for mine, and it just makes me sad. Well, it's sad.
Music that's out right now.
I know. It makes me sad. There's some music that I enjoy, but most of it,
You would have Ariana Grande.
No.
I'm trying to think of what else. That's
You're not going to. I know.
I know. I don't know new music.
Probably some Taylor Swift.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe Fun. Are they still a thing? Fun?
No.
They put out one album and disappeared, huh?
They do have good music, though.
Okay.
I listen to them.
Panic at the Disco, Fall Out Boy, they would play.
No, they wouldn't.
You don't think?
I know they wouldn't.
All right, well, that's the end of this episode. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed this episode because it allowed me to reminisce a little bit about my own high school experience.
At the beginning, I thought it was good. Now at the end, not so much.
Oh, that's disappointing. It's still my number one.
It's how it goes.
We'll see if this one manages to hold on to the number one spot. It's going to be hard to beat. All right. Well, if you want to comment, you want to send us a line, you can email us at psychyououtpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to get a review. So we had mentioned a couple weeks ago how we got a negative review and that we kind of tweaked the show based on that feedback.
Yes.
We would love to get more feedback now after we've had a couple episodes of the new kind of mixing format. In our stuff with the format. You know, please do leave us a review. Right now, the only review we have is that 1-star review, which kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Because we do have a lot of listeners, so we would love to get some feedback.
And we've been going for a while.
Yeah, yeah. We've been going for 9 months now. I think we started in May of last year.
I was going to say we're now in season three,
and we're committed to finishing. So please leave us feedback. Please go to whatever platform where you can leave a review and do that for us. We would greatly appreciate that.
Tell your friends
if they like Psych and you like Psych.
If they've never seen Psych,
then watch Psych.
This is the thing for you. Watch Psych, listen, or just listen.
That's right. We'll take either.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, on that note, we will see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Woo.
That was a very sad woo.
Woo.